may embrace me, he may exploit me, or he may break my heart by not appearing before me.
He is a libertine accustomed to having his way with the gopi damsels for the satisfaction of his lusty desires. Let his will prevail. In spite of everything, he is the beloved Lord of my heart. Nothing less, nothing more. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Fully independent, my religion is to obey his command. I have lost my independent whimsy. I could never recoil from serving his will for any reason. End quote. So that's basically his purport to that verse. In the perfect stage, the devotee has shed forever his material designations of body and mind. His only concern is to satisfy Lord Krishna's every desire in the transcendental realm of Goloka, which is Krishna's personal playground. Right, so here he's shed forever his material designations of body and mind. That doesn't mean he doesn't have a body on the transcendental platform, right? The same way, it's not that he doesn't have a mind. Sometimes devotees are surprised, but you're trying to control the mind here, get rid of the material mind, that you have one over there. Same way, you have a body there, why wouldn't you have a mind? Why wouldn't you have intelligence or ego, right? So everything's there, the problem is over here, it's perverted, right? It's mundane. Well, there it's transcendental, right? The mind accepts and rejects, so it accepts Krishna, rejects anything that's not connected with Krishna. The intelligence makes a difference between things and finds the commonality. So it finds what are the different ways that you could serve Krishna and what are the things that can be pulled together to do that service, right? The ego is the identity, so you identify as servant of Krishna. Right? And the body is engaged in Krishna's service. Right? In this mood of unalloyed love, the devotee's only hope for service is in the role of a feminine assistant to the gopis. Such service is indeed available to the devotee's original spirit, available in the devotee's original spiritual form of transcendental senses. The jiva must never consider assuming the position of an ashraya vigraha devotee, in other words, a principal associate of Krishna. Just the thought of this will make him egoistic. The uncontaminated state of the pure jiva's existence in the spiritual world is subservience to the ashraya vigraha. The jiva is dear to Lord Krishna, yet constitutionally by the Lord's desire, he is in the marginal category of the Lord's spiritual energy. So he puts him into this ashraya vigraha. So we're not trying to be God, we're not trying to be God's servant. Does that make sense? We are servant of the servant. That's our position. That's just the way it is. So we never try to be ashraya vigraha, right? We never try. Radharani is the ashraya for the conjugal ras. Mother Jashoda is the ashraya for the parental ras, right? Like that, Sudam, Sridam, Subal, Madhu Mangal, and the different categories. So like this, you have different devotees that are in these different categories as ashraya, right? So we are never trying to be those persons, right? Lalita Vishaka, they have their positions. All the Astasaki, so many other gopis, they're all in ashraya vigraha, but they're subservient to Radharani, but they're still in that position. We are simply servants of the servants. Does that make sense? That's the nature of the jiva. It's the way it always is. Krishna is expanding his internal potency. That an expansion is the jivas. That means that the jivas then are serving that internal potency, serving Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? The grandson is assisting his parents in their service to the grandfather. Right? It's just the way it is. He doesn't have a direct relationship. Right? The father has a direct relationship. He doesn't. His relationship with the grandfather is as the son of his father. So in the same way as the jivas, they are, their relationship with Krishna is not as an ashraya devotee, right? It's as a servant of the ashraya devotees, as since we are the expansion of. Does this make sense? Right? So it's just, if that's accepted, then everything works very nicely. Okay, the principles revealed in Sri Shikshastika. The 8 Shikshastika verses demonstrate the 3 principles, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Broadly, the first teaches about the process of congregational chanting of the holy name. The second about the unfortunate reluctance of the conditioned soul to take up this best process. The third about the proper means of chanting the holy name. The fourth about the renunciation of deception and all adverse desires. The fifth about the jiva's original spiritual identity. The sixth about feeling the good fortune of coming near to the Lord. The seventh about the highly elevated mood of separation. And the eighth about how one gets established in his absolute goal of necessity. Right. In all eight verses, the Abhideya principle is shown. Within that context, the first five verses impart Sambandha Jnana. The remaining three explain Prayojana. The first five verses concern Sadhana Bhakti. The next two about Bhava Bhakti. The sixth to the eighth verse, and especially the seventh and eighth, deal with Prema Bhakti, but for sadhakas. Right?
Okay. Okay. Let's see.
So he's saying, in all, the Abhideya principle is shown. So you're dealing with the process, but in that you're establishing the sambandha in the first five, right? Because then you're dealing with the Samkirtan process, what is keeping us from doing that, the proper means, the renunciation and giving up what's improper, like that, and coming to one's spiritual identity. Right, so that establishes the sambandha, because one always has to remember the sambandha is going to go from when one gives up the full-time pursuit of material consciousness, and one takes up the process of rectification of taking up Krishna consciousness, from that moment up to the point of actually coming to the stage of having one's being situated in one's spiritual position, that is all establishing sambandha. Does that make sense? But the process to do that is Abhideya. Does that make sense? That's why all these things of being able to understand overlapping principles and elements at one time is important. Means you're trying to establish yourself as Krishna's servant, right? So that means you could say everything from Shraddha up to Bhava, that's what it's doing. Does that make sense? Because then you're established properly in your position as Krishna's servant, in your natural position. Before that, you are aspiring to come to that position. You know what I'm saying? But it's still counted as a devotee. And that whole process then is devotional service, is Abhideya. But it's establishing yourself in sambandha. Does that make sense? And then the last ones, he's saying here, the remaining three explain prayojana. Right? The first... okay. And the next two about bhava. So that means the sixth and seventh. Okay. The sixth about feeling good, and the seventh about the good fortune of coming, and the seventh about the elevated mood of separation. So then you're establishing the element of then bhava, bhav sadhana, and the, how do you say? Bhav sadhana, and actually coming to the platform of separation, because in bhav sadhana is also going to be starting from the point of one's service to Krishna, one's identification, right? So it starts with sambandha jnana. Shravana dasa, varna dasa, this is, sambandha jnana, because you're understanding who you are as in your eternal position, and you're adjusting with that, becoming accustomed to that, comfortable with that. Does that make sense? So that's sambandha. Then you're going to get smarana dasa, where then you're absorbing. When that becomes complete in samadhi, that brings one to purvaraga or vipralamba. Does that make sense? Like that. Then from there, then it's, very quick. From there, then apandas, you're part of the pastimes, everything like that. That then turns into sampati das, where that means you are only situated there in the platform of prema. Your position is now set. Does that make sense? Right. So then, yeah. And then the seventh and eighth are dealing with prema bhakti. Because then when that comes to that stage, that vipalamba that's being taught on that intensity and all that, these can only be appreciated actually from prema. Right? Because then one has to actually, yeah. And beyond prema, then where it goes, it's taking it beyond into Mahabhav and prema vaichitya and all those things. Those can only be appreciated in a spiritual body. The material body can't handle anything beyond prema. Right? The other eight stages, one has to be in a spiritual form. The material body
it won't able won't be able to adjust with it. And he's saying is that as it is, the mind will focus on one thing at a time, right? And that can be very intense, right? And very create so many, even though it may be happiness, so many disturbances to the body, right? All the various ecstasies. Okay, and that's one sense. What if all five are on that platform? So that's five times what this body is handling now. You know what I'm saying? Some people in separation, they can die, right? Death is actually, you know, a possibility. So now increase that by five. The body is not going to last. Therefore, only in the spiritual form can one go beyond that. Does that make sense? That's why sahajis and that, they talk about stuff beyond that or try to show stuff beyond that. It's a joke. Because the body just physically can't handle that. You know what I'm saying? You can't take a regular car and run it down the, you know, Bonneville at 1,000 miles an hour. You can't do it. It'll just fall apart. You understand? It can do. It can do 100. It can do 200. Some are built for 300. But that's it. You know what I'm saying? They can't go beyond that. So same as the body has its limitations, what it can do. Right? Does that make sense? We may think, oh no, it should, but it's just like you cut your head off. It doesn't work anymore. Right? So we can think all we want. No, it should do this and that. But why don't you think, well, if they cut my head off, then I'll still just run around. Chickens run around. Why can't I? You know, so does that make sense? Like that. So, yeah. Okay. So then the goal we're trying to get here then in the sixth is that coming to that platform of you will take bhava as your beginning of the goal. It's the bud. Right? So even though if you're looking at it from sadhana, you know, sadhana in the conditioned stage to sadhana in the liberated stage to then bhakti, that prema, then you can take it like that, that it's something lower. But when you're taking it from the sadhaka's point of view, then it's the beginning of prema. It's the dawning of prema. It's not prema yet, but it's the dawning. Just like when the morning light comes, the sun's not up, but still you get light. Right, so bhava is those ecstasies and other things that come from that light of prema, you know, arising. Or let's say the sun of prema rising. Does that make sense? So therefore, then it would be a prayojana verse. But he's making the point that the seventh and eighth, they deal with prema bhakti. Right? But the mentality, how the sadhaka is going to look at it. Does that make sense? Selecting the following verse composed by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, to convey my feelings, I offer my obeisances to all the readers and thus end this commentary. Quote, the Supreme Lord Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, and his transcendental abode are of the same spiritual substance. They are my objects of worship. The topmost service is rendered by the gopis of Braja. Srimad Bhagavatam is the absolute authentic scripture, the basis of all teachings and conclusions. Krishna prema is the fifth goal beyond the four goals of the Vedas. It is also the supreme destination. All this is Lord Chaitanya's opinion, and therefore the opinion most favored by us. Other opinions are neither favored by or even interesting to us. Right? So he's concluding with this. This is our position, is that this whole idea is that anything, oh, new, this, that, get interested, go running after it, that, oh, the Shris are doing, the Madhvas are doing, oh, hey, let's, like, you know, check it out, what's going on. The point is it's just, we're not, we don't favor it, because it's not what Lord Chaitanya is giving, and it's not even interesting. So it's just, we have our line, we have our commitments, and that's what's interesting to us. Anything else just isn't interesting. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, oh, so that's the point of why speculation must be given up, because speculation means anything new is interesting. If it's intelligent and it's new, it's clever, then and you can speculate on it, then it's interesting and even considered something favorable. Right?
But this is the reason that that academic mentality must be given up, this mentality of scholarship, right? Because we're not looking for these kind of like interests or like this. We're just looking for, this is what we do, that's what's interesting. Right? There's plenty for us to do. We don't have to get involved in so many other things. How much can one do? Right? So we're looking at depth. Mahabhava is depth. Does that make sense? So that's what's interesting, is going deep, not going so wide into so many things. No, it's just what works for us. What is our line? What is approved by our acharya? That's what's interesting. Everything else, not interesting. Maybe popular, maybe trendy, maybe mod, but we don't care. Other people can do so many things, we don't care. So it will reflect in one's own spiritual life that you know what you're supposed to do, you do that. Others can be into so many things. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Anybody can be doing whatever they like, but what does it matter? We know what we're supposed to do, so that's what we do. Does this make sense? So this kind of maturity, this kind of commitment, then is what works. All these others, oh, this one did this, that one did that, how can I go on, how can I have faith? It's like, what's important about that? What is important about that kind of mentality? We know what we're supposed to do. Krishna's there, the acharyas are there, the eternal associates are there, the dhamma is there, and nobody else is interested. What do we care? Right? That was in the final instruction of the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The same point is being brought up. His final point is that even if everybody else gives up Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't. Right? Well, it's not here as a fad, a fashion. It's just reality. This is what we do, and this is what's going on. And so this is what we're going to do. Others are interested, great. Others are not interested, what do we care? You know what I'm saying? Why should our faith and our commitment be disturbed because others don't have it? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Prabhupada said, if even one person goes back to Godhead, then all the work he did was worth it. So that means there's a possibility only one goes. But why is that one going? Because they have that faith, so therefore they're going. You know what I'm saying? So whoever has that, they're the one that goes. A mission's so perfect, the whole universe can go. But one has to have that commitment. Right? Does that make sense?
Scriptural statements relevant to the shloka. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:31-11. Dear Master, O Beloved, when you leave cowherd village to herd the cows, our minds are disturbed by the thought of your feet, more beautiful than a lotus being pricked by the spiked husks of grain and rough grass and plants. 10:31-15. When you go to the forest during the day, a tiny fraction of a second becomes like a millennium for us because we cannot see. And even when we can eagerly look upon your beautiful face, so beautifully adorned by curly locks, our pleasure is hindered by our eyelids, which were fashioned by the foolish creator. And Krishna Karanamrita Shloka 12. May the lotus-like feet of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the only gallant hero who plays eternal pastimes with all the Lakshmi Devis, gopis, whose blooming beauty withers the exquisite beauty of lotuses, and who is an expert at fully convincing his devotees of his divine protection, be forever enthroned in my heart, giving me unfathomable happiness. Right? So this is the reality. This is where we're going, right? This is Krishna consciousness, not anything else. Everything else is that since we're going, then we should try to take as many people or help as many people get interested to go as possible, right? But other than that, there's no purpose, right? Just like the purification process, its only benefit is that it
allows one to be more Krishna conscious. Otherwise, purification on its own, what's the big deal? You know what I'm saying? We've been Brahma before. You can't get more pure than that in this material world, but we're still here. Does that make sense? So therefore, Krishna conscious, attachment to Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna, Krishna being our only interest, that's what we're trying to establish. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Any questions or anything on any of this? Yes.
So the process to achieve the highest state of spiritual life is basically chanting the holy name?
Yes. Yeah, basically all it comes down to is chanting. The Sankirtan, that's the whole thing. Chanting the holy name and the association of devotees. Like, so whatever we can do in that association, because we're chanting, and then in that association, you know, so many things have to be done. You have to eat, place to stay, taking care of the other devotees, encouraging new people to understand and take up Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? But it's all about chanting. Does that make sense? That's the real thing. Something else. Fun part. The beginning, there's so many questions. Is that once you get to the end, it's just so obvious. Well, questions on anything else?
From this morning.
From this morning, okay.
So going from spiritual form, formless, into material form?
Spiritual form, yes. I mean, you're going from material form into spiritual formless into spiritual form. Like that. We're not interested in the spiritual formless except for the purpose of getting a spiritual form. The spiritual formless will cut or negate or dissolve material form. Right? Because material form is only in pursuit of the spiritual formless. Right? So therefore, the spiritual, that means then that spiritual form is the perfect, you could say, manifestation of form in pursuit of that same quality. Does that make sense? We're trying to enjoy here, so there are particular form or forms that we're attracted to. But now understanding that there's a quality of Krishna that we are pursuing through the medium of these forms, right? But then why are we doing that? Is it for Krishna's pleasure, since the quality we're pursuing is Krishna? You know what I'm saying? So Krishna's in that form, that quality, then his potency has taken that form to assist that or serve that. And then we are then taking up the pursuit of that form after that quality. So we're putting ourselves in the position of servant of the servant. Right? So because the form is manifest by the Lord's potency, and we're then going after that. But now, is that service that we're rendering to that form favorable to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? A recommended process, it's not pious, then very much it's just all about us. If it's pious, then that's nice, it's closer, but what is actually pleasing to Krishna? Right? There's some side results or things like that can be offered to Krishna. But actually then, If we really want to please Krishna, then we would go back, take that quality, go back to its origin in the spiritual platform with the manifestation of the spiritual forms to serve that. You know what I'm saying? And then follow that line. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, hearing and chanting about the name's name, the Lord's name, form, quality, and pastimes becomes the actual service. You know? So that takes care of whatever we're looking for here. So when we say, don't worry about the material, just, you know, absorb yourself in hearing and chanting about Krishna's glories, it actually is accomplishing what we're trying to do here. We just don't make the connection, that's all. So we think, well, there's this, and then there's this spiritual life. No, it's like, there is only spiritual life. It's foolish to think that there's not. It's just of whether you want to work on, you know, the lower grade of the formless, though you're interpreting it as form, but it's mundane form. But work on that, or work on the actual platform of spiritual life. You know, so it's the difference between spiritual and spiritual life. Does that make sense? Now you can ask your question.
I was just thinking of
the other half of your question.
in the primary creation, then I always got the impression it was like a dream state before things were manifested. So in that
No, it's not a dream state. We may be in a dream state, but Krishna's already in a blueprint created everything. That's the universal form. So he's created everything. Mm-hmm. But in blueprint like that, then Brahma manifests it. You know, in other words, the principle of it is already there. You know, the quality that makes a mountain a mountain. You know what I'm saying? So that quality, and then that form that serves that quality. You know what I'm saying? So the masculine and feminine elements have already been established. Then Brahma simply manifests it. Right? You know, it's like the architect has already drawn up the blueprints and arranged all the materials and everything. So now the engineer simply takes that, looking at the plans, builds it.
And so the form's already there?
The principle of those forms are already there. Because there's already form before that happens. You know, we say that there's nothing, but the Purusha Shukta means there's no material creation, but Garbhodakshay Vishnu is there with all his associates. So where did they come from? So he and them are there before the creation. All right? So then if they're going to make the creation, you have to make it out of something. Right? But the only thing there is Krishna. Is Garbhodakshay Vishnu. So then he is offered in this mental sacrifice. Then he becomes everything. So Brahma simply manifests that so that we can see it. Does that make sense? Does that work?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it that you're trying to gain with this, through this thought? You know what I'm saying? You're following a process of thought for a purpose. What is the purpose?
Like, I couldn't see where formless exists.
Because technically formless and form go together, so they don't actually exist separate. But because we can we relate to form as material and something beyond that, it's not material, so therefore the formless, these two then work very well for us in the conditioned state. You know, and even though we talk about the personal, it's actually the quality that we're looking for. So it's the formless that we're still looking for. We haven't brought it down to the commitment to the other living entities in our interaction. You know what I'm saying? You have a friend, so you have in your mind already the formless conception of what a friend is. And as long as he manifests the form of that friendship, then you're great friends. As soon as he manifests some form that you do not identify with your formless concept of friendship, then that friendship runs into trouble. So actually, you're dealing on the formless platform. But the point is formless and form go together. You can't separate them. Like energy and energetic, they go together.
Energetic means it can produce energy. So therefore, if there's energetic, there is energy. And energy means that it's come from energetic. So you can't separate them, but they are different. You know what I'm saying? They're different, but non-different. That's the Achinta Veda. So the formless is there. He exists in that, but it's based on the form. Therefore, they go together. Right? Does that make sense?
So you can...
They're never separated, but for intellectualizing, in other words, using this impersonal method, you intellectualize something that has form that breaks down that attachment to it. Does that make sense? And then one can come to the point of replacing it with what's appropriate. You know what I'm saying? Krishna is, you know, whatever, let's say, taste you get in food, that's Krishna. And so then there's a external manifestation of the form of it comes in some variety of food or varieties of food or some standard of food or whatever it is that is the kind of form that you've chosen to serve that quality that you're looking for in food, right? But, so, therefore, by eating, you're technically serving that quality through that medium of there. But it's not, one, you're not seeing that, so that's illusion. If you do see it, but then how is that favorable to Krishna? Therefore, you do the same thing that's now favorable to Krishna by taking prasad. You know what I'm saying? So eating still goes on. Nothing changes. Right? So that's what Prabhupada says. You don't have to change your position. You have to change the consciousness. Right? So then that takes it, you take it from the material to that formless state, to the state of transcendental form. Does that make any sense?
Besides acting, you know, like with the family, besides acting according to the nature of the family, you know, dealing with it like that, what actually makes interaction with the family favorable service to Krishna?
Favorable means you brought it into the realm of piety, right? You brought it from impiety to piety. And then from that platform, you know, by piety meaning that you're following Guru Sutra and Shastra, right? It's according to that. Then from there, you're going to try to see that the results of that then are connected to Krishna, right? And then it will be that the results are for Krishna. Right? So, but much of this, you're still dealing with the indirect. Ultimately, then, it's Krishna's transcendental family. You know, being part of the community of Braj. You know what I'm saying? And serving Krishna there. That will be, that's actually then what you're looking for. You know what I'm saying? But until one gets to that platform, then one deals here. You know what I'm saying? But one can read about, hear, and chant about that. You know, but one will continue, as is favorable, continue performing your duties with the family here. Does that make any sense? Like that. So it's limited what it can do. But the point is that if it is favorable and one is able to, then it's nice. You know, it's just like purification. As long as it's favorable to Krishna consciousness, that's what we're interested in. But if it's purification for something other than the Krishna consciousness, we're not interested. So we're not interested in purification. We're interested in that which is connected to Krishna. Right? So that means, you know, pious family life, engaged in Krishna service, it's the engagement in Krishna service that's nice, not the pious family life. You know what I'm saying? Say pious is better than impious, but when it's connected to Krishna, that's actually what we're looking for. We're not just looking for a nice, pious asset. That's a mistake will be made much of the time when we're dealing with Varnashram. We think that Varnashram stands on its own. It only stands in connection to Krishna. Otherwise, we're not interested. You know, as Vishwanath is pointing out, it's just we're just not interested. That's all. If it's not connected to Krishna, we just don't care about it. You can connect it to Krishna, fine, nice. But generally we'll connect what is according to, you know, what is done in our line. Because other lines have their own ways of connecting, and so that's nice, that's great. you know, we're happy for them. But it doesn't mean that we'll do that. Does that make sense? Does that get anywhere? Or, you know, in other words, you have to take this stuff, think about it, and try to apply it in your own life. It's not this, you read it in the book, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do, and then just go do it. No, some examples will be given, but you have to take it, contemplate it, and use it in your own life. Right? That's manisha. You know, thoughtful. Because unless you can apply it in your life, it's not going to work for you. Does that make sense? Does that work now? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay. Something else? Yes.
I'm not sure what I understood right yesterday morning. Is it that the way of detachment, the method of detachment to Krishna for women is going on at the same time, and for men it's like a separate process, the first detachment period?
That it would be more prominent. The women will do it, but they'll move much more quickly on it. See, there's principles on which we're working there, so that's simply an example on the principles that we're working on, right? Since the women's principle is that of attachment, right? If that attachment is there, that security is there. So the point is you're trying to find those things that you can attach, your attachments that you can be connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? If there's something that's very annoying, then you start to see, well, what is it that you're looking for in it? You know what I'm saying? Right? So you're looking for something in it. And then that thing, then you find, okay, well, how can I find that in Krishna consciousness? Right? And then divert the attachment to there. It's the same process. All souls are using the same process. The point is what we're saying, the men can get by with intellectualizing more on it, dealing more with the formless to convince the intelligence, you know, like that, you know, or convince themselves on the intellectual platform. They're still trying to convince the mind. They're not necessarily looking at it from the emotional point of view, so they can function in that longer, and then when they make that commitment, then it's quite strong. Does this make any sense, or? So what we're just saying is that the women will tend to go from one attachment, but they have to replace it with another attachment. Right? That's what's going to happen with the men also. Right? It's not going to be complete until that happens. But they don't mind intellectualizing in between to get there. You know what I'm saying? But in the platform of intellectualizing, where is the security? You understand? Where's the security? Where's the identity? Where's the connection? That's why then it won't be as the women won't find it to be that favorable. Does that make sense? How do you get that? No, their attachment, whose attachment is not so strong? Their attachment is there, it's strong, but it's just of a different nature. The attachment is to generally operating something to get a result they want. Getting that result, they'll call that happiness, right? The women are trying to manipulate something to get what they want for the experience, right? So just getting something done, okay, you know who you are, you get it done, you get a result. So Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan is there. But they're starting from the principle of Sambandha. Women are starting from the principle of Prayojana. So you have to establish Sambandha. So unless you know who you are and the connection, the relationship, and then how you're going to get, where's the security? You know what I'm saying? The man, even if there's no Abhideya or Prayojana, he still exists. But the woman, unless there's Sambandha and Abhideya, where's their connection?
You know, a goal means that it has to be based on someone's doing something to get something. So the goal is not independent. You know, while I exist, now I can just exist here like a you know, how you say, a nebbish. Or I can do something and get something. You know what I'm saying? It means it's common that you hear of, you have the term, I don't know if it means anything for you, but you have the term lazy bum, right? Now when you say lazy bum, automatically, what gender does it refer to? Men. It doesn't refer to women. You don't have lazy bums as women. You just don't, you understand? So a man can just sit there and just exist, do nothing, go nowhere, you know, accomplish nothing, and still he's okay. So that's what I'm saying, is they can function with this because their identity is already there. Now if they're going to do something with identity, accomplish something with their identity, that's another question. Right? So women are accomplishments, so then if you work backwards from there, you have to have an identity. Right? And a process to make that manifest. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you have, let's say, you have $1 million, okay? And it's just sitting there. Is there any problem? No, it just sits there. It does nothing. Nothing is bought, nothing is sold, nothing is there, nothing is experienced. It just exists there. Okay? Okay. Now, let us say we have the experience of winning that $1 million. Okay? So now to win that $1 million, there must be a process, and there must be elements of that and identification within that that follows the process that gets that. So you can't be independently the experience or happiness or whatever it is of having the $1 million without going through the process of getting it. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Does that make sense? So when the woman connects to the $1 million, then bingo. You understand? But there must be a process. Otherwise, they can just sit there and nothing happens. Right? The money's sitting in the vault of the bank. No one's jumping up and down in ecstasy. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Sure. They're non-different, but at the same time, they're different. They're more result-oriented. Women are more experience-oriented. They're both part of result. But one is the one is through the application is looking for the I say. Just I lost the words. Result oriented, you know, they're looking for the result. Means they want the result of the action. The woman wants the experience of the action. Both are results, but one is observable and one is experiential. Does that make sense? Basically, you could say that. Yeah. They will function best in those like that. That's why renunciation isn't the main thing. It's that connecting you to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Renunciation is only useful because it brings you to connect you to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So if you're attached, just become attached to Krishna. Ha ha.
makes sense. So what's the difference between Mahamaya and Yogamaya? Okay, now if we're looking at it as the same person, the Lord's potency, right? Then the difference is simply in its manifestation on connected to Krishna or not connected to Krishna, right? So is there anything in between? You know, there's Mahamaya and there's Yogamaya, and is there something in between? No, it's one or the other. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the feminine mentality. Does that make sense? Does that make sense or no? Are you catching this principle? Say again.
I'm not catching it.
Is the Lord's potency male or female? Okay, so then that's how she's working. Yeah? So that's what we're talking about. But Brahman is what? Masculine or feminine? Yeah. So therefore, the male is attached to Mahamaya, therefore it has to pull back into Brahman and then become attached to Yogamaya. You understand? But the other side, you just switch it. You have to convince yourself, so the process is the same, but it's just that when it's convinced, it just switches over. Does that make sense? You have something, okay? Now, let us say, you have something, it's there, it's secure, you're comfortable with it. You have heard about something better. Okay? Now, do you just drop what you already have and run after what's better? Or do you keep what you already have until you have dealt with what is supposedly better, and when you're convinced that it's better, then you'll drop it? Right? Yeah, so that's the point. The inchworm doesn't pick up its back foot until it's put down the front foot. Right? So that means it's there, it puts down the front foot, both feet are there, then it will pick up. So there's never a time when it's in a state of just existence, you know, of just nothing. You understand? But the masculine ego can function in that temporarily. You know, give up one thing, this is crazy, I give that all up, and then have nothing. Right? Husband and wife are sitting in the West, right? They own the house there. They're thinking about moving to Mayapur, right? Because they've gotten all inspired and everything, and why are we in the West and in Maya and everything like that? What's going to be the difference between the two on dealing with the house? Right? They want to buy a house in Mayapur, right? The man is, sell the house in the West, then we have the money, then we buy the house in Mayapur. So I sell it, I have nothing, then I buy. Right? The woman is, don't sell this till we have the other one. Because if that doesn't work, then we still have this one. You understand the difference? Now it makes sense? Okay. Okay. And here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
And if you can keep both of them, that's even better.
Or you just go in the house and do it.
That's there. You know, because then you're just working on the security that he's taking care of. You're not getting involved. But even better is one in the West, one in Vrindavan, and one in Mayapur. That's even better.
And then if you could have one in the Mediterranean, that would be nice also.
And of course, there's the monasteries.
Don't ask that.